Okay, this is March 31st, and tonight is questions and answers.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I behold you through the eyes of love, you radiant beings, you gods and goddesses. I hope that is really sinking in to everyone, that we are connected to this thing called God. I had a telephone call last night, in fact, from a friend of mine who had a young man staying, visiting her, and he has just recently gotten into a church, you know. He's decided that that's going to save him and all, going to church. And he was discussing with her the whole idea of the Bible. And now this young man, I have met him several times, is a teacher. And he teaches in, I always call it Yellowknife. And I think there's Yellowknife somewhere up, way up in Canada someplace. He absolutely believes that God wrote the Bible. Yeah. Now, he's a school teacher. He went to college. But there are many people out there that absolutely believe that God wrote the Bible. I said to her, did you tell him that God doesn't have hands? You know. And then there are so many people who believe that Moses wrote the first chapters of the Bible. So Moses did not write people. He never wrote. They had scribes and so forth. He never was able to do any of that kind of stuff. So I don't know where people get these ideas, but they get them and they stick with them. And that's that whole idea of being a puppet to your conditioning, to believe something, a myth, that is not true. It is absolutely not true. That takes nothing away from the Bible, one bit, anything away from the Bible. I also explained to this lady on the telephone, I said, well, you know, there were two Bibles, a Northern Bible and a Southern Bible, and they combined them in order to unite the country. And that's why you have two stories told in different ways in the Bible, and they're called doublets.
And what country was that?
Israel, you know. So they had to unite the country, and that's why we have it. In the one part, it was always Moses. And in the other story, they had to bring in Aaron, because in the south, Aaron was the main man. So they combined them and made it Moses and Aaron, you see. So there are all those, and nothing sad. I mean, you do not have to, that doesn't take anything away from the Bible. But people should know some of the things.
Knowledge.
It's just knowledge. And she's a school teacher too, and she said, well, I never heard of that. I don't think that's true. She never thinks anything I tell her is true. And I said, well, biblical scholars have been piecing it together for years, and they can figure the whole thing out. You know, they can figure it out, but what not? And then so many chapters of the Bible were taken out because it's been redacted that many times. And it has gone through so many translations in different languages. And that's why the words don't match. That's why you can't figure out what they're saying, because it started with the Aramaic language. Then it was the Greeks. And then it was Latin. And then King James turned the King James Bible into English. So, of course, there were words in these different languages that don't make sense. You know, they put the wrong words in there. But here again, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, when I say these things, I'm not condemning the Bible. It's a great book. If anyone can get through it, please feel free to read it. But I was taught, if you wanted to read the Bible, you have to say, this is the story of my life. And then you can read it, because it's all, you know, all the different stories relate. They're a story. They're telling you a story. So, anyway, just thought I'd bring that up. The other thing I thought maybe I would bring up tonight to make it more clear. Last week we discussed the idea that somebody in the class came to me and they didn't like the idea that I used the word God. And I said to them, well, I don't know what else I'm going to throw in there. And I didn't think I used it that often. But what I'd like to say is, not talking about God would be like, or using the word God would be like having a best friend and not using its name, you know, not using that person's name, you know. So if God offends anyone, I tell you, if it offends you, call it Harry. Do anything you want with it. God's not going to get upset. God's not going to be offended at all about any of that stuff. Then the other thing I wanted to bring up, because I had started that last week, was the idea when I have a friend, his name is James, and he always thinks that I'm angry with God. And he says, and that is why I have AIDS, is because I'm angry with God. So, I think that's absolutely not true, and I tell him that constantly. And the other thing is, I have no idea why I have AIDS. I never let it bother me in the least, and I've had it for 35 years, people. And nothing has ever happened to me. So, he thinks that God is punishing me. God is never punishing you and never sends disease upon anybody. We do that with our own minds somehow. And some of my thinking must have gotten offbeat, but just enough that I do. I never, when they said you have AIDS, I never said to myself, oh, I'm going to die the next day. Doesn't bother me in the least. Never affects me in the least. I keep right on going. So, anyway, with that said, now I'll open it up for questions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead, because mine will be long.
Okay, you think it will be, but I don't know.
Yes.
Go ahead and ask it.
Well, you know what I want to know, all about Mary.
Well, when you say you want to know all about Mary, here again, we know that Mary, in the Bible, it was the mother of this person that we call Jesus. And was she, you know, anything spectacular? We don't know if she was anything spectacular. Because it was 500 or 600 years later that they decided we better do something with Mary. Because the whole idea of the church people was to get members. And at that time, the Catholic Church would do anything to bring in a member. Now, all the holidays that the Catholic Church celebrates are pagan holidays. They just changed the name so that they could get all the pagans. So then they discovered, well, these pagans have a woman figure, a goddess of some sort. How can we get that? Ah, we'll make Mary. So they made Mary and revered Mary to the point that, you know, more people pray to Mary than they do to God or to Jesus.
Especially in the Catholic.
Yes. More people pray to Mary. She became famous, and she's supposed to be sitting up there on a throne somewhere. They just had to do it to get people in. And then they had to come up. The other thing, since Mary could not be ordinary.
She had to be a virgin.
Well, she not only had to be a virgin, but she had to come from, her mother's name was Anne. You never hear about Anne. Anne had to be pure. See, most people think when they say the Immaculate Conception, they think that's Jesus. Jesus was not the Immaculate Conception. The Immaculate Conception was Mary. They had to make Anne, the mother, pure, immaculate. And so Mary was born through Anne, achieves the Immaculate Conception. They make all that up, people. And here again, it doesn't matter if you believe it or you don't, you know. It doesn't matter. But you have to realize that somebody's making this stuff up. And the same way they had to, Jesus had to come from the house of David. Jesus never came from the house of David. They had to rework the whole family tree to make sure that it worked out that he came from the house of David. He never came from the house of David.
Well, how many years prior to Jesus being born did the Catholic Church exist? When did the Catholic Church?
Well, the Catholic Church did not exist until there was Jesus.
I'm sorry?
The Catholic Church never existed until there was Jesus. Mm. You see, because that's how we get that idea of he was Christed and all, so they made a religion around him, and the Catholics did that. And it, I think Catholic only means universal. So they had to come up with a universal church to do that. And then they used that. But the main person in the Catholic Church was Peter. You know, it's St. Peter's in Rome. That Peter was the one who started the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, well, and then it gets all convoluted, and then people believe other things. And at one point, you talk about Mary and all. You know, at one point, the Catholic Church, the abbesses in the Catholic Church were so powerful and so revered, they had to get rid of them. That's why they knocked those women right off, because it started out, all religions started out, you know, as a maternal religion, and then they became paternal. Men took over, because it was the idea in all pagan religions that the woman was revered because she could give birth. So she was always above men. So it was a maternal world. But then men said, but I have a penis. And now I have to be more powerful. Men cannot do a baby. But so it all switched from the goddesses to the gods. You see, but that's all, you know, they just keep evolving and evolving. So, and I think religion will just keep evolving. We find out more all the time about it. The main thing is, what do you think of different things, and how are you living your life, and do you have an open heart and a kind heart, and, you know, are you growing, are you feeding your soul? That's what it's all about. Most people go to church, you know, they may hear the word soul, but they have no idea what that means. And they're not doing anything about it, you know. They're listening to all that stuff. And I think it's beautiful, and of course, hymns and chants and all that stuff are beautiful. But if it's not nourishing your soul, mm-hmm. it's not doing anything. The whole idea is to nourish your soul. And to see, what do I believe here? What am I thinking? What am I doing? How am I becoming God? You see, am I becoming kind? Do I have all these qualities? Am I developing all these qualities? And we're not developing all these qualities. Many people, I mean, are not developing them, because what has taken over? We use the main thing in the world today, which is ruling the world, is economy. And what causes economy is materialism. Most people worship materialism. They also worship hedonism. But just watch and look at, go to a mall, you know, and watch all those people. I mean, that's their church now. Malls have become the churches. They're in there buying everything they can get their grubby hands on. It's materialism. So we're worshiping materialism. We're not worshiping this thing, that this idea of a power and a wisdom and an intelligence which transcends everything. So most of this stuff in religion is made up completely.
And it just dawned on me, of course, Christianity began with the birth of Jesus Christ.
Well, yes. People don't know that. Yes. See, well, that's one of those dumb moments, because you don't think of that.
Yeah.
Well, you don't think of that. Yeah. Before that, there were all, you know, all the different religions and so forth. And Christianity, of course, was an upstart, and how they got so many people is they kill off all the competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they just killed off the competition.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Does that help you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Think about a question.
Chomping at the bit.
Very happy.
You want me to? I'll ask you a question.
I would love that.
How do you stay in the now? What part of your mind is always in the now? Let's put it that way.
What part of your mind is always
in the now?
You're listening.
Definitely my conscious mind.
Yeah, well, not so.
Well, that is true too.
Because you can't stay.
We space out.
Yes, we space out.
I think it's you're listening.
It's your subconscious mind. Yeah. The subconscious mind is always in the now. It never wavers. Where your conscious mind, you're here, but you're thinking, oh, did I leave the iron on at home? Oh, do I have a driver to go here? Oh, am I going to get that wedding? Am I going to do this? Am I going to... So you're never staying in the now. The subconscious mind stays in the now all the time. Now, why is that so important, especially in this teaching? The subconscious mind is really the ruler, because it's where your belief systems live. And this is why people want to manifest something, but they use their conscious mind thinking they're going to get it. The conscious mind can't stay in the now long enough to bring anything in. And you have to build up your subconscious mind, always saying in the subconscious mind, I am worthy, deserving, totally level one, I matter. The subconscious mind has to be telling you that all the time, because the conscious mind is not going to, because you're looking at, oh, look, that person's better than I am. Now you've just lost it all. So you have to work on that other part. I think that's amazing, by the way.
So,
I knew this would bring it up.
If the subconscious mind is the thing that's running in our background with our belief system and
yes.
all that,
the only way
we have to deal with it is our conscious mind. So how do we communicate with our subconscious mind?
You have to notice all the time. You have to notice what you're doing all the time. You have to notice what you're thinking. You have to notice where your mind's going. You have to be able to bring your mind back constantly. Bring it back constantly.
But are you saying that when we are present,
yeah,
we are in tune with our subconscious?
Yes. But how often are you present?
Moments every
day. Yeah. But we use that because we think we can do something in those few moments. You can't. It's the subconscious mind that always is in the now.
Well, they always talk about programming your subconscious mind so that you know, like, you know, that's what affirmations do. Like, so it eventually seeps into your subconsciousness, like worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and mattered. Is that our greatest tool then for that is affirmations?
Well, yes, affirmations and noticing.
What do you mean by noticing?
You have to notice what you're thinking all the time. Most people have no idea what they're thinking. They don't notice. They just let it go and go and go and go and go. You have to notice that. That's why so many people want abundance and prosperity. But in the subconscious mind, you're thinking lack and limitation all the time. So you have to change that to your subconscious mind thinks nothing but abundance and prosperity.
But if my subconscious mind is thinking that all the time, how can it be present?
Because that's the, you're thinking truth, and truth is always present.
Oh, so you could program your subconscious mind with truth, or you could program your subconscious mind with things that are not true.
Absolutely. And that's the whole idea.
How do you discern then which is truth and which is not true?
Well, now you know perfectly well what's true and not true. You cannot let your mind tell you that this world is going to hell in a handbasket. You cannot tell that the people are awful and all that kind of stuff. That's not the truth. There may be a lot of awful people out there, but it's still not the truth. So you have to concentrate, and you have to be able to see what you want to see. Remember, the whole idea of religious science is to learn to think the thought that you want to think, and learn to feel the feeling that you want to feel. But you have to train your mind to do that. So it's all in
training. So when you say staying present, then are you saying present to what our subconscious is doing, or staying present to what's happening around us?
Your subconscious mind is always present. It's always in the now. It's your conscious mind that wanders here, there, and everywhere. So you must control the conscious mind so that you can program the subconscious mind. And most people can't do that. Because the world is very convincing out there, and it keeps drawing you into it. It keeps drawing you all the time. It gets you off balance constantly. Does that help you?
Yes, but now I'm wondering if you think something is a truth and you program your mind with what you think is a truth, and then later on find out that you were misguided about something and that it's not a truth.
But you must never do that to yourself, and you must never have that type of thought. You must realize that the mind that you're using is the mind of God, and that mind always knows the truth. Why would you want to program yourself or have any doubt whatsoever? Let me give you an example. Last week I said... last week you weren't here. I told the story of the ladybugs. That comes from a movie called Under the Tuscan Sun. And she is a child ran after the ladybugs and ran after the ladybugs and ran after the ladybugs because she wanted to collect them. And then she got tired. And she laid down in the grass, fell asleep. She woke up, the ladybugs were all over her. So when you stop running and after something, it comes to you. So a lady last week said to me, "Oh, but we have to do something. We have to make So you have to go back to the idea. God does never ask us to try harder. God asks us to believe more. We have to believe more. So, yes, there's that thing, treat and move your feet, do something, take an action step and so forth. stopping is an action step, people. Stop and let it come to you. If you're chasing something, have you ever, like your the neighbor letting the dog out, if you chase the dog, doesn't it keep right on running in front of you? If you stop, doesn't the dog come to you? It decides to come to you. You can't. It's a delicate little thing, but you see what I'm trying to get you to see, how your mind is thinking. You see, now she was taught, this lady, yes, oh, well, where's, wait, oh, no, that can't be right. The action step is gone, you see. But the action step is there. You see, you have to be able to think clearly about all these things. So, does that help you any? Well, I love the ladybugs. Yes.
So it's pretty much being aware, you know, like just noticing, not only noticing yourself, but also noticing what other people say, what you say,
right,
what other people are actually thinking, because whatever they're thinking, they're saying.
Right.
So you're kind of noticing it.
It's always noticing and being aware are one and the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
One and the same thing. But what do you do when you notice these people?
I know when
do you agree with them is the question. You see, if you say nothing in the group, then you have to say to them, I'm sorry, I do not agree with that.
Or I might not say anything.
Yes, well, that's the... Therein lies the rub. When you say nothing, you've accepted it.
Well, maybe it's not my business sometimes. Like, say I always...
It's always your business to say, I look at this differently. This is not the way I see it. Because the more you do that, the more you let those people get away with it, that's a mind virus. And it just keeps building and building and building to the next person. So now you have 10 people telling you the same thing, and you're going, oh, well, let them all.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, I don't believe that. Here's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do it in a nice way. You don't have to go up and slap them all in the face.
Sometimes I have heard other people say things that I'm aware of that, you know, well, they know, whatever they're saying, they're putting in the universe,
yes,
and that's negative.
That's right.
But I might not correct them.
Yes, but it's your job to correct them. We don't want it building up in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to use a little thing that I do, I just look at them and say, thank God I don't live in your universe.
But you say that out loud?
Yes. Thank God I don't live in your universe. I go on about my business. Do I want to live in there? By agreeing or not saying anything, you're starting to agree with them. So you don't have to be nasty about it, and they don't get it anyway when you say, thank God I don't live in your universe. But at least you stopped it, and you may have given them some food for thought.
A lot of times I've noticed that is when people label themselves. Like I've heard, I mean, you know, I'm talking about certain situations, people I know that might say to other people, I'm so poor. You know, they might mention that, and I think to myself, putting that out there and putting that in the universe, that is not a good thing to say.
Oh, it's not a good thing to say.
It's too strong of a thing to say, because you're, you know, like underlining that thing,
yes,
in you. You know, that particular person would be better off saying, even if they said, you know, I used to be poor and now I'm becoming much richer, you know, something like that.
I would say I'm becoming rich. I'm abundant. I would never use the word poor. I would completely get that out of your vocabulary. Never listen to it and never let anyone tell you they're poor.
But tell me the time. So you think it's a good idea when I do hear certain people say, even if it has nothing to do with me, But they're talking to me in a conversation or allowing me to maybe correct them or mention things to correct that into a positive way.
Well, yes, just think that that's not the way I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I stop people all the time. I had a young man at the house for lunch the other day. He just arrived. He's an actor. He's paying $700 a month rent. He just rented a vehicle for $500 a month. Now, that's $1,200, and he's telling me how poor he is. And I said, well, I find that hard to believe if you can do those two things. I said, don't you realize that money is always freely circulating in your life when you have a divine surplus? And he goes, oh, I guess you're right. You know, you cannot say that. I hear a lot of people say they're poor, and you know damn well they have money. Why do they want to say that? I don't want to hear it.
It's a habit.
Absolutely, and it's a very bad habit.
Yes.
Yes. Very bad. Don't do it. But you can be nice to people and so forth. You know, but just correct them if you have to. I do. You know, in a nice way.
Now, I know from a long time ago that I've been working on myself for a long time. I used to listen to tapes about that would say first within, then without. You know, I'd be walking around thinking all days, first within, then without. You know, I've been really working on this.
But because it's always from in to out.
Yeah.
Always has to start with you.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that subconscious.
Right. Let me see if I can give you an example of how that works. And this came from Peggy Bassett. Does anyone remember Peggy Bassett? She had a very large church. She's dead now. Very large church in Huntington Beach. Her name is Peggy Bassett. Anyway, she was talking about tattoos. Somebody had all these tattoos. Somebody said, how could they have gotten all? It had to be in the mind first. You know, when you look at somebody with all these tattoos, it had to be in their mind first that they wanted the tattoo on their body. It's always from inner to outer.
And when I decide on what I'm going to wear, it's this world inside that decides and picks it.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
absolutely.
It's so true.
Mm-hmm. I never know until I step into the closet.
Yes.
What I'm going to put up.
And then it comes to you,
and then
things fall. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a question back there, young man?
You know the Course in Miracles talks about that the only problem is separation.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that? How can we unite ourselves and our affirmation is going to...
Well, we do that all the time, especially in this class, because I remind you every time that you're a god or a goddess. That you're united. There's no such thing as separation. There cannot be separation of any type. This teaching is a teaching of unity. Unity. We're all one. And we're all one with this thing called God. We're not outside of God somewhere. And God is not outside of us. We're all together. And separation, when you have separation, you start to think, bad thoughts about yourself and bad thoughts about everybody else when you see that. So you have to remind yourself, I'm one with everything. I'm one with everything. Till you absolutely convince yourself that that is true.
So what is this thing when you do have bad... I mean, if you do have bad thoughts about other people, I don't mean... you know, like horrendously bad, but just in general, not always having good thoughts, maybe, you know, forgetting that, you know, that you want to be thinking good things all the time. So you kind of get fallen off a little and you start thinking you don't like that person that much or that person.
Yeah.
So how do you get rid of that?
Well, you noticed it. As soon as you notice something, then you can change it and you can come back and say...
Because it isn't a good thing.
Well, it's not healthy for you to do, but we all do it because we live in thought atmospheres. And we get in with all this stuff and we think, oh, that's a bad person. This is that. There's no such thing as a bad person. People may do bad things, but the person is good. So that relates back to my little thing, remember? The dish is never dirty. There may be dirt on the dish, but the dish is never dirty. So you have to go to that. And just correct yourself. Without punishment, people, without anything. Notice what you're doing. Well, okay, I'll try again. That's A Course in Miracles. Try and try again. Choose and choose and choose again. You always are making choices in A Course in Miracles.
Mental equivalent.
Yes. Yes, you have a question.
I had a lot of comments to make about Mary, but it could take a long time.
About Mary?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really have a question. Do you mind if I make some comments about Mary?
No, go ahead, make them.
Well, in the ancient Egyptian religion, you had Osiris, who was the god of vegetation and the god of death, and you had Seti, who was the god of the desert, which was considered to be kind of a bad guy. And he dismembered Osiris and threw his pieces all about Egypt. And his wife and sister, Isis, gained magical knowledge from Thoth, the god of magic and science, and located his penis and impregnated herself with him and gave birth to Horus, who was the reincarnation of Osiris and was called the Son of God. And by the Nicene Council, you know, by the time Christianity was codified around the Roman Empire, there were over 1,000 shrines to Isis and Horus, the magical mother of God and the boy God, the Son of God. And within 100 years after the Nicene Council, they all became shrines to Mary and Jesus.
Yeah.
And you know, I think what Christianity did was take a lot of substance from pagan religions.
They took everything from pagan religions.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is they transformed it into a Christian context.
And what was the biggest thing they took from pagan religions?
Well...
They had to have a virgin birth. They had to have a mystery, because all these other gods, you know, came from a duck or a swan or something.
Yeah.
So now it had to be a magical birth of some sort,
yeah.
A mystical birth.
Yeah. Well, I think the central focus of Christianity by the time of the Nicene Council was the resurrection. That was the biggest mystery at that point. But as much as we can understand it, the early Christians before that, the Holy Communion was the central ritual,
yes.
Which meant one experiencing his connection with God. And there was this cult of Mithras in Assyria before that, where they believed that the god was the bull. They would slay the bull and they would say, the body of Mithras shed for thee, and they would eat the flesh of the bull, and they would say, the blood of Mithras shed for thee,
and that's why the church brought in communion.
Right.
And the wine, because they had to have a blood religion. And that's how they conquered South America, by the way.
Well
no, through because as soon as the people in South America, the natives realized that it was the blood religion, Christianity. See, Christianity is not life affirming.
It's not like the what?
It's not life affirming. Christianity does not affirm life, it affirms death. You watch your man's crucified on a cross. It's not a life affirming religion. The Essenes were the ones that early Christians, the Essenes, of course, you know, then they killed off most of the Essenes. But we do know that the Essenes were the whole idea that their thoughts did something, that they were capable of other things. They weren't into Christianity the way they teach it. And it's still taught that way, by the way, Christianity.
Well, my point was that the Christians took from what went before, because...
Absolutely.
Can I finish my sentence? Yes. Because these observances were very meaningful to everybody. I mean, they didn't just pop out of the air.
Of course not.
And so they became meaningful within a Christian context.
Absolutely. That's why we have Easter.
Yeah. And Jesus' birth. It's the solstice.
Yes. They were all from pagan religions. And I have nothing against the pagan religion, because they watch nature and they watch the world and they said, well, this is happening and this is happening, you know. And it all made sense to them. But for Christianity to survive, it had to take bits and pieces from all the religions,
right,
and put it together so that they could, everyone would join and say, okay, I can do that.
It's what Margaret Mead, the behaviorologist, calls a synthetic religion.
Yes, exactly.
And there, if I may, can I say one more thing? There's some substantial archaeological evidence to indicate that Jesus was the illegitimate son of a Roman soldier named Pantera. It's pretty well documented.
Yes.
He was a colonel in the Roman army, and neither Mary nor Joseph could really say much. They pretty much had to do what he wanted. And there were coins minted from the time of Jesus that say Jesus of Pantera, which the Catholic Church confiscated, and there's probably some of them sitting in the belly of the Vatican to this day.
Well, and if you have a pregnant teenager running around, you have to come up with something.
Let the Baptist religion get a hold of that.
But here again, his, you know, the main thing is there is a power out there that we can connect to and that we can use, and we do that. And here's where the separation. We're not separated from the mind of God or the mind of the universe, whatever you want to call it. We're not. We can use this, everything around. We can use all this stuff. And that's what we want to learn to do. We want to learn to see how big we are, how powerful we are. And religion wants to tell you that you're weak. Mm-hmm. And we are not weak. We are not weak beings. We are strong individuals. And if they would start teaching that, this world would be more magnificent than it is now, because we'd get rid of all the shame and the guilt and all this stuff that's out there. So,
well, I'm at the end of Wayne Dyer's book, Wishes Fulfilled.
Uh-huh.
And he talks exactly about what you were talking about, the subconscious and the conscious. And he's saying exactly the same thing.
Absolutely.
That everything begins with an idea, your imagination. Everything comes from imagination.
Yes. Okay, come from anything.
And as when we're dealing with the subconscious and the conscious, we have to just constantly be aware of what we're putting in our conscious minds, because that's feeding the subconscious.
Yes.
Saying the same thing.
Yes. Everybody's saying the same thing.
Everybody's saying the same thing.
Just approaching it from different angles and so forth. And with religions, all Ernest Holmes did was go comb through all the religions and find the common thread and put it together. You know, he compiled is what he did. He didn't write. He compiled things.
So, imagination, when you're, you know, imagining
subconscious.
Yes. And that's the greatest power that you have, is to develop your imagination. And I think, I can be wrong about this one, but I think they used to use the word imagination instead of faith. You see, they tell you to have faith, but what you have to have is imagination. Once you have your imagination, you can use this mind, to think these wonderful things, and know that once you think these things, the whole universe conspires to bring it together for you.
Well, there is the word image in the larger word imagination.
Yes.
It's all about having an image.
Yes.
Or being presented with an image.
That's it.
By the unconscious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Does any of this help you?
Yes, yes.
Good. Yes. Andy, any other questions?
Yeah. So the subconscious runs our life, and how... And I heard what you said about stopping. And so when you're stopping, that means that you've created something in your inside you that you're drawing towards you or making manifest. And I guess my question is, how do we best, or what's the easiest tool to coalesce that inner vision that we want? Because, like, there are so many things to be scattered about, you know, when you're thinking about, like,
you mean
the years ahead and all the different places you can go, and, you know, like it's a
but you can't go any place.
Well, yeah, you're always there, but I mean, as far as, like, what you,
the best way to do any of that is to know.
To know what?
To know what you want to know.
That's what I'm asking, is how do you figure that out? How do you find that out?
You sit down with yourself and you think, I know that this is absolutely true. I know that I'm a great actor. I know that the jobs are coming to me. I know that money is coming to me. I know all this, instead of hoping for it.
But I'm not even talking about that as much as, like, because I know that, but to know specifics of what I want.
Just fine tune it all the time. Just keep fine tuning everything.
Okay.
Yeah. Think of a laser beam. You can do it. You know all this stuff. We all know all this stuff. But our conscious mind takes it away from us because there's too much rumbling in the world out there. Too much. You cannot be in the world, you know. You have to know that all that stuff that's going on is not the truth. And I'm in this world, but I'm not going to be of this world. I'm not going to be. And everyone, all things written, all TV, everything is against that. It's always telling you something bad.
Well, it's a bunch of people trying to earn a living.
Yes, it's a bunch of people.
It's a bunch of writers.
Because here again, we come down to economics and materialism. And those are the two things that we worship. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you have to know that how to balance it and what to do with it. You know. Nothing wrong with having things. I love having things. But I think the meaning is gone from it. You know, when I was younger, the meaning of something, to have that. There's no meaning in any of that material stuff. Once you realize it's all right to have it, you can't put meaning into it. You know, it doesn't give you status. People do it to get status.
We were talking before class about taking a job that you didn't like,
yes,
because you needed the money.
Yes.
And you were saying that that was not productive. And I see it's productive when it pays the bills. And
but it's killing the soul.
So you would you recommend giving up the job and not having any money?
Yes, because what's running that person?
It's what's motivating them to keep the job? The money.
Fear.
Yeah.
The whole thing is motivated by fear. Fear that I won't have the money. So why don't you know that money is always freely circulating in my life? I always have a divine surplus, but God is my source and my supply, and I can go out and get the right and perfect job.
I know I feel that way, but
yes. Well, we have to talk. I'll have to talk to him. And the other thing that I always tell everyone, and I forget sometimes to keep saying it, spirit can do for you what you cannot do. It can find your right place and put you in it. You cannot do that for yourself, people. Spirit can find your right place.
Yeah, fear is the motivating factor.
And put you in it.
Yeah.
Good. So let spirit help you with this. But if you're going out because of the money and because of fear, I'm afraid that I won't have the money to pay my bills. I'll take any job I can. You're killing yourself. You're saying you're absolutely killing yourself.
So spirit can find your right place and put you in it.
Yes. Spirit can do for you what you cannot do. You get that's what you have to remember.
And it's just a matter of asking spirit,
yes,
to do that?
Because you think you can do it. Now, here's the phrase.
Okay.
Spirit can do for you what you cannot do. It can find your right place and put you in it.
So you would recommend that he quit the job and just...
Yes, but if he doesn't have enough faith built up, we have to build up his faith, and he has to see himself transitioning out of that job. He has to know that the next job is coming. He has to know all that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also...
But he's not capable.
Well, he should be capable, and if he's not, I'm going to knock him on the head. You know. Because the longer he stays in that job, his people are nasty. They're mean. You know, they're talking behind his back and everything else. That's not, would you want to go, how could you make yourself go to work? Can't. That's,
they did. I've been through that. But that was a different recession.
No, I can't hear you.
But it almost seems like we have to be supernatural because the world, or else we'll become puppets.
Well, yes, you have to be careful of becoming puppets, and we all have fallen in and out of being a puppet to our conditioning and so forth. But why don't we use the word natural instead of supernatural? Nothing is supernatural. Everything is natural. So use the word natural, you see, and see what you're doing. It's noticing. It's becoming aware. It's doing that. And once you do that, things fall into place for you. And start out small and keep practicing till you build up your muscles and so forth. You see, everyone wants, oh, I want the $1 million to right now. You're not going to get it because you don't have a consciousness for it. You don't have the consciousness. You have to build the consciousness first.
So when you say build the consciousness for it,
yes.
Like if you say, oh, well, you know, I want $1 million right now, why don't you think you could, why do you have to build a consciousness?
Because you have to build a prosperity consciousness. You can't go right out and get a Rolls Royce right away because you don't have a Rolls Royce consciousness. You could start with a Ford and then move up to a Chevy and then move up to a Buick and then move up to something else and you arrive at the Rolls Royce because you have stretched your consciousness a little, a little, a little till it's big enough to contain that. Most people's consciousness are not big enough to contain $1 million. And if you gave them $1 million and it came into $1 million, they would lose $1 million.
And that's what happens.
We see that constantly, mm-hmm. Yes. But you have to stretch the consciousness, and you can do that by seeing things, you know, and by telling yourself, and by moving up and looking at different things and so forth, you know. Do you ever go up and down Rodeo Drive?
Go up and down.
Rodeo Drive, looking at how the stores.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's talking about looking around in Beverly Hills at all the nice things to see.
Well, see, well, that's building your consciousness.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could just as well.
Stretching
and building your consciousness. If you stay in the slums all the time, you're not. That's not going to get
you. You say Malibu, okay, for you?
Yes, Malibu. Yes. You have to see. You have to see better things and different things. Yes. And know that things are out there, yes.
First it's I wish, then it's I want, then it's I will.
Right? Yes. It works. Mm-hmm. Works perfectly.
I wanted, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up in Chicago. My cousin taught skiing, snow skiing up in Wisconsin. We used to go up there. And, you know, they've got the rope tow at the ski hills, right, you know. And you've got to let that rope flow through your hands. And then you gradually apply enough pressure so that it gets you up the hill, you know. And you see people grab it and then yanks them right out of their skis, you know.
Yeah.
And when I think about meditation and detachment, I always think of that rope tow, you know. You've just got to let it flow through your hands and then close your hands as much as you need to get it up that hill, you know. I was just thinking about that when you were talking.
I always use the image of the, how do you catch a monkey.
Yeah.
Do you know how you catch a monkey? They have like a coconut or whatever it is, with a hole in it, and they have the food inside. The monkey puts its hand in, grabs as much food as it can, now it can't get out. You have to take a little at a time, and then you can be released. Yeah. Any other questions here, people? One more or not?
Well, just I want to combine, get clarity on two different things that you said, which is that you have to stretch your consciousness, but then you also said spirit can find your right place and put you in it,
yes.
But not until you've stretched your consciousness?
No, I did not say, see, now that's how we always get into the rub and so forth. That's like the lady last week and said, well, we have to take an action step where you just can't lay down and have ladybugs come to you. You have to find a balance between those things, and you have to know that you're doing that. Now, you know you have to stretch your consciousness. While you're stretching your consciousness, you must also know that spirit is working through you to get you to your right place. You see, that's separation. You see, our thoughts like to separate. You have to bring them all together into one unit.
Like stretching would be like, I would want that Rolls Royce.
Yes.
But that's really stretching.
Yes.
Right now. But the spirit will bring me into like maybe a more balanced, comfortable place.
Yes.
So, you know,
it would get me on that road.
Yes. And you could always visit a Rolls-Royce garage. You could sit in a Rolls-Royce. You could ask for information. You could write to the Rolls-Royce company and say, can you send me all the information? Can you send me the direction books and all that kind of stuff? Now you're bringing all that into your consciousness. Your consciousness has to do something about that and with that. Does that make sense? Or town cars, whatever you want, yeah.
Whatever you want.
Whatever. All right. We'll stop. It's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I, and there ends the lesson. Thank you.
Thank you, Della. Thank you. Thank you, Della.